quorum is present. Let's see. Anne, were you here at the last meeting? Have you reviewed the minutes?
Would you like
to move the minutes?
I will move the minutes.
All those in favor of the minutes, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The minutes are approved. All right. The first item after our minutes is the approval of the LCC plan, legislative plan for employee benefits and policies. And Mr. Huebinger, would you like to come to the table, please, and help us through this? Your fine memo that I read this morning, so thank you.
Good afternoon, members. I'm Greg Huebinger with the Legislative Coordinating Commission.
Happy holidays to each of you.
In your package, you have a copy of the proposed plan and a summary memo that describes the major changes to that plan. This plan, as you know, establishes health insurance benefits and vacation and sick leave policies and a bunch of other policies that affect House and Senate employees as well as joint agency staff. By law, the insurance and vacation and sick leave provisions take effect when adopted by the LCC. The other provisions are effective when adopted by your respective rules committees. These proposed changes were developed by a staff group that began meeting last September. The list of those names is included at the end of the summary. Many of them are here so that when I get into trouble, they can bail me out. I want to acknowledge and thank them for their work in this task. The proposed changes in the plan reflect the work of that group. In the summary, I divide the changes into three groups. Conforming changes, which are the changes that we proposed that conform us with state employee contracts and compensation plans for unrepresented state employees, and other changes conforming to changes in state law. And there's a second category of changes where we propose that are a result of proposals by staff, which reflect our experience in implementing this plan for the last several years and reflect the consensus of that group. And then there's a third category of technical clarifications, which we list just so that you're aware of the minor changes that we have to make to keep the benefit book current. So if it's okay with you, I'll briefly walk you through the changes that are listed in the summary. The major provisions in the plan are the insurance chapter, and as you know, for the last several years, or forever, the legislature has decided to purchase the insurance plan that's developed in the executive branch for state employees, the State Employee Group Insurance Program. The LCC must adopt this plan by the end of the calendar year so that our employees and the members continue receiving those insurance benefits, which are effective on January 1st. Members and staff completed the enrollment process for that plan with those changes earlier this fall. In the summary, we list some of the major changes that happened. I just highlight a couple of them. The first is that premiums increased by 6.7%, which is less than the national average for calendar year 08. They're projecting that premiums will increase about 10% in 09. Employees continue to have access to guaranteed access to Tier 2 clinics. The other, I think, significant change is that state employees will have access to their pharmacy benefits through a single pharmacy benefits manager, Navitus. There is the manager of the State Employee Group Insurance Program from Dewar is here if you have any questions about the details about that plan. The second major conforming change relates to salary savings leave. This is a provision in state law that's been in existence for at least 10 years, I believe, where employees can take unpaid voluntary leave of up to 1,040 hours every biennium. This is a great benefit to the legislature. It allows employees to be off during the interim when we're theoretically less busy. And the employee continues to receive insurance benefits and vacation and sick leave accruals and continues to receive their contributions to their retirement plan. The legislature continued this provision in law during the last session, and the benefit book proposes to continue it for legislative branch employees as well. Organ donation leave, there's been a provision for many years that allows for voluntary leave for employees who wish to donate an organ. There was a law change in 2006 that made that a mandatory leave of up to 40 hours of paid leave, and we're proposing to implement that change as we're required to do by law. And fourth, a minor provision that relates to severance pay. Most of the state labor contracts have a minor change where they are implementing a contribution to an employee's health care savings plan of $250 for $200, and they're proposing to increase that to $250. The next category of changes relates to proposals that were generated by staff. The first deals with reappointed employees. We have numerous provisions in our plan that relate to vacation and sick leave and floating holidays. And we've had provisions that apply to temporary employees who leave legislative employment and then come back again as temporary employees. In the last several years, we've seen experiences where House and Senate and LCC have taken temporary employees and brought them back as temps, taken temporary employees and brought them back as regular employees, or regular employees and brought them back as temps. And to help ensure equity for all of these situations, we're proposing to provide the same benefit for all of them, no matter what their status was when they came back. The second change from staff relates to vacation leave accrual. We've had discussions in the benefit book staff group for the last several years about the difficulty we've had attracting new employees here because of our vacation leave benefit. We currently provide about 2 weeks of leave for entry-level employees, and we've had particular difficulty attracting people from the private sector. We've had extended discussions about that, and so for this benefit book, we are proposing to increase the vacation leave accrual rate for entry-level employees, for those who have 0 to 5 years of experience, from 13 days per year to 16 days. And for people with between 5 and 8 years of experience here, to 19 days from the current level of 16 days. So it's an addition of 3 days per year for employees in those two groups. Third, we're proposing a change in the way that sick leave can be used by employees. We believe that sick leave is, as you know, is a flat rate of about 13 days per year that an employee has to use for the benefit for their own benefit when they have health issues or for their dependents, for their family members. We are proposing, and under that plan, employees can, that plan permits a father or a husband to take up to 10 days of sick leave when they have a child born in their family. And that same plan permits an adoptive parent up to 10 days to arrange for the adoption of a child. We're proposing two changes. One would permit fathers or husbands to take the same amount of sick leave as a birth mother does, 6 weeks, when they have a new family member. Second, we are proposing to clarify the provisions that relate to adoption so that an employee can use sick leave for the various stages of the adoption process and take up to 6 weeks of vacation leave, of sick leave for that adoption. So we're providing the same benefit for people going through adoption as we are for people who are dealing with the birth of a family member. The fourth change we're suggesting relates to the donation of leave. The House and the Senate and the LCC all have policies that permit employees to donate vacation or sick leave for the benefit of another employee who has exhausted their vacation or sick because of illness of themselves or a family member. Under this proposal, employees would be able to donate that time across the legislative branch so that a House employee could donate vacation leave for the benefit of a Senate employee or vice versa. The fifth proposal deals with transition leave. You may know that when an employee is being terminated not for cause, in the context of a reorganization where an employee is being terminated, we permit up to 80 hours of transition leave, paid leave, so that the employee can get their resume together and begin the process of looking for a new position. Under our current plan, that leave has to be used in the last month of employment. We're proposing to give appointing authorities somewhat greater flexibility in the use of that 40 hours of leave so that they can use that in the last 2 months of the employee's employment with the legislature. Sixth relates to deferred compensation. We've been talking for a long time about how we can encourage employees to think more about their retirement and to increase their contributions for their deferred compensation, which is oftentimes used to help pay for insurance premiums in their retirement. Our current plan provides for a matching contribution of $300 per year. We are proposing in this plan to increase the employer match to $400 in the first year in 2008 and to $500 in 2009. At the same time that we give an alternate option to employees where they can, instead of receiving the dollar match for deferred compensation, where they can convert up to 40 hours of vacation leave to deferred compensation. They can do that, but they have to take 3 hours of vacation leave for every hour that they convert to deferred comp. We're proposing to change that ratio from 3 hours to 2 hours in the conversion. It makes it a little bit easier for them to get the match, to make the contribution. Madam Chair, that's a quick run-through of the major items. If you'd like to answer questions, and the staff are here to help as well.
Person Junkie.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Question is, you referenced, for example, under the vacation leave, probably is true with a lot of these sections, that competing with the private sector, and this is what you see as a way for us to keep or recruit people to put us on par with that. Have you done, and or your staff done, comparisons? It is frustrating to lose good employees to the private sector, and I'm sure it's frustrating going the other way. But also, have we compared to the executive branch and the departments the benefits, too, so that we're not seeing? We lose a lot of staff that go to a department or an executive branch job, too, maybe because of some of this, or vice versa. Are we coordinating with the rest of state government, I guess, to put it, so that the vacation accrual, for example, for us is the same as someone over in the Department of Agriculture who's unclassified? Is that?
Madam Chair and Representative Junkie, our basic vacation leave accrual structure is very similar to that provided in most of the contracts and plans. What we are proposing here to do by increasing the rate for entry-level employees would be more generous than what the executive branch typically does.
And is that true, Madam Chair? Is that true on other categories? I mean, have you taken the maybe you haven't, but I'm just asking, do you typically compare across agencies here, too, to see what's going on across government lines?
Madam Chair and Representative Junkie, we're very cognizant of those changes and what the state contracts and compensation plans provide. That's that drives probably 80% of what's in our benefit book.
To be the same.
Other questions? Senator Hamm.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Huebinger, I have a couple of questions, too, on the staff proposals. I'm a little concerned about, I understand the desire to try to be competitive and make sure that what we're offering employees is commensurate with what goes on in the private sector, but it seems to me that a 13-day vacation schedule for an employee that just started is a little generous compared to what my experience has been in the private sector, and I'm just wondering if, has the staff done any analysis of what the practice is in the private sector to see if that is indeed the standard? I'm unfamiliar with that. Is the standard as a new employee to get 3 weeks of vacation from the day that they're hired?
Mr. Huebinger.
Madam Chair and Senator Hahn, we have better data on public sector than we do on private. I think we at the staff level understand that we're being a little generous on the entry level. It was the mechanism that we could best come up with that allows us to attract the folks that we've been trying to hire that come to us from the private sector that have some experience. That's where the resistance has been for some of our attempted hires.
Senator Hamm.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Mr. Huebinger. I understand that. I'm not sure that I'm in total agreement with that as a change. And I guess just another question, too, with respect to in the section of the handbook on page 10 on vacation leave where eligibility is the change was if somebody is reemployed, used to be 12 months, now it says 5 years. What's the rationale for extending the amount of time between a person's termination and rehire from 12 months to 5 years to be eligible for those benefits?
Mr. Huebinger.
Madam Chair and Senator Hahn, that provision is what governs the how soon the employee starts accruing vacation leave. Temporary employees, when they come here, don't start accruing vacation until they've been here for 6 months. What this indicates is that when employees are appointed, if they have previous legislative experience, they start earning it immediately. And so what we've done is to extend the look-back window to 5 years so that if someone was an employee here comes back as a temporary employee, they start earning vacation leave immediately if it's been within 5 years.
And Madam Chair, just,
yes, Senator Hand.
Just so that I understand, so there's two changes you're proposing. One is that temporary employees, it used to be that they had to be employed for 6 months before they're eligible for benefits. Now they're eligible immediately for the vacation and other benefits. Is that correct? And then we're also saying that if they've worked for, say, 5 months and then they leave and are gone for 4.5 years, they come back and they get credit for the 5 months that, I'm just trying to understand the mechanism here that you put in place.
Mr. Hubinger, we seem to be getting hung up on the temporary employee issue versus full-time employee issue. So maybe you could just begin from the beginning on this.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A regular or permanent employee starts accruing vacation immediately upon hire. A temporary employee doesn't start accruing vacation until they've been on the payroll for 6 months. So if an employee is reappointed, we will look back 5 years, and if they have legislative service, that will be counted towards the period when they can start accruing vacation leave.
And I understood that from the text of the change in the handbook, but I'm still not clear on why a 12-month look-back window isn't sufficient for that and why it should be extended to 5 years.
Mr. Hubinger.
Madam Chair and Senator Hand, it is somewhat arbitrary. We've had some experience in the last several years of staffing up for legislative sessions when we're hiring temporary employees, and there have been times when we have brought on board people who have served here, so they have experience, which is valuable, but their employment is farther than the 12 months that we have in our current policy.
Mr. Hubinger, if you don't mind, I'm going to ask Ms. Knight to come up, just because the House went through this transition last year and had a lot of experience with different types of hires, and I think that's maybe partially our experiences in the last few years of switchovers. Mm-hmm. We learned a lot about this. So, Ms. Knight, can you
help? Madam Chair, members, I'm Kelly Knight. I'm the Director of Human Resources for the House. What this provision, this change, will do is often the House will bring back someone that perhaps has retired to help out either for session or perhaps during a medical leave of absence. This then helps because they come back, they earn. If they were earning vacation at the time they left, then they would begin earning vacation and sick leave right away versus having to wait an additional 6 months. This still would not have any impact on, for instance, our pages who have never had legislative service and come in. They would still have to work 6 months before they would ever be eligible to earn either vacation or sick leave. So this is really more of a carrot to get some of our retirees who have that experience to come back for a short period of time to help.
Senator Hand, when you think about the workforce issues that we're going to deal with in state government, I guess this is one way that we can attract people back in who have experience for short periods of time when needed. And we found some success in inviting people back for short periods of time during session, during medical leaves, that is very efficient because they actually have a lot of training already.
Excuse me, Madam Chair, I appreciate that. And I guess the part of the concern I have is I certainly understand that if you have people who have worked here and have experience and they come back, and it would seem to me that there is a value to that, and perhaps the way to show that would be to offer them a higher wage than someone who had no experience. But if they're coming back for a temporary period of time and then we're also offering them 3 weeks of vacation and the other benefits that would accrue to a full-time employee, then I'm just concerned about why we would do that.
Madam Chair, members, actually, the vacation, they don't come back and get just 3 weeks of vacation or 2 weeks of sick time. It's earned on a per pay period basis. So, for instance, if they were here a month, they might earn 2 days So it's in relationship to the amount of time that they're here. They're not awarded that lump sum amount.
But I think the difference is it's on when the clock starts running for accrual. It's not an issue of somehow, you know, an unfair or disadvantaged benefit, but just really that it's a matter of the day you walk back in the door, you can start accruing the time for sick and vacation leave versus having to wait for that 6 months.
Well, no, Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Pocahontas.
Doesn't this mean that you get it gets you up to the second level automatically, 6 hours versus 5 hours accrual? Isn't that what this does?
Who wants to handle that? Can I go ahead, Mr. Huebinger?
Madam Chair and Senator Pocahontas, one gets to the second level by having that many years of experience, so they have to have 5 years of experience to get.
So that 5 years doesn't affect that 0 to 5. Okay.
I'm sure, Senator, no.
This is really innocuous. Yeah. Seems pretty innocuous to me.
Further questions? Okay. Representative
Sertich. Madam Chair, I'd move approval of the LCC legislative plan for employee benefits and policies book.
Representative Sertich has moved approval of the benefits book and its changes. Any further discussion? All those in favor of approval of the benefits book, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
All right. The book is approved.
Is this the whole package?
Yeah. Yes.
So minute clinics are now called convenience clinics? No longer
yes.
Minute clinics?
It's a business change.
Is that
Minute clinic is a trade name.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like the difference between taking Motrin and ibuprofen. And it's
so I think it means
like the generic drug version.
Clinics
or tissues.
What it means is we can take our kids to the Target clinic, or we can take them to the Minute clinic, mm-hmm. or we can take them to whatever it is called.
The one that is in DOT is actually a trade name Minute clinic?
Yes, I think so. There's one in
DOT. Oh, not DOT. I'm sorry.
Dort.
Dort.
Over in Centennial.
That is the trade name Minute clinic?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I just Yes. I didn't know they existed.
Why don't
they
exist?
I don't think they really do.
11 years.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mr. Huebinger. I know, and I want to thank the staff members who worked on the book as well. I know it took a lot of time and a lot of effort, and you also have to work on getting all of our attention throughout this, so thank you for that. Our next item is review and approve resolution relating to the Office of the Revisor of Statutes. So the revisor would come forward. Hello, Ms. Timmons. How are you?
Good.
Good.
Madam Chair and members, for the record, I'm Michelle Timmons, the revisor of statutes. And what you have before you is a proposal for a resolution relating to a very unique problem in the revisor's office. As you probably know, we rely very heavily on temporary employees to serve as drafting and editing assistants during the session. These are the individuals who do the data entry for the bills and the first level proofreading of our three levels of proofreading. And so we usually hire 5 to 7 of these individuals, how many returning temporaries we might have with experience. But so we usually hire 5 to 7 totally new people. Under the benefit book, totally new temporary employees do not get sick leave. And I think many of you have been up to the deck, and you know that those folks work in pretty close quarters there. And so the problem we've run into is that because these temporary employees do not earn sick leave, they drag themselves into work when they're sick. And what happens is we end up with a virus or a bacterial infection going through the entire staff and decimating our population to do the work on the bills. So And I don't think, you know, in talking this over with other staff through the benefit book discussions, I don't think the House and Senate tend to have as much of a problem because most of your full-time temporaries are pages who just don't work in the same capacity or the same physical environment. So the suggestion was to pass a resolution that was very narrowly, was specific to the revisor's office and narrowly tailored to solve this problem and try to do so with a minimum of expense. And so what we've proposed here is a resolution that would allow up to 24 hours of emergency sick leave for these new temporary staff to use when they're sick. And then what the resolution also says that if those 24 hours aren't used, it's different from regular sick time. It's not going to be cashed out. It's not going to be carried over. So there's no extra financial obligation because of it. It's really an ability to, for people who are sick, to be able to stay out of the workplace when they're sick and get some pay for it.
Ms. Timmons, it's really a public health measure.
It really is a public health measure.
We would like to, you know, short of ever having everyone mandatorily wash their hands in the house, I think this sort of... Do people have questions? Representative Murphy, you look like you have a question.
I just don't think... I suppose the 24 hours, that's assuming that we have eight-hour work days.
Correct.
But right. We don't, so. And so that person... That it's the last week of session, and that person is sick, and mm-hmm. So that's only one day.
Well,
and so that person is still here spreading their germs the next day.
I think,
or is it 3 days? That's an important thing.
The 24 hours typically would relate to 3 days because we don't pay overtime. For temporaries, we don't pay overtime for any legislative employees. So it really relates to 3 days. I guess this is something of an experiment. We're trying to come up with something to try to solve a problem.
Senator Metzen.
I'll move the resolution.
Senator Metzen moves the resolution. I think, Ms. Timmons, if you just would report back to the LCC after next session about how it's worked. I think that would be helpful for us to understand how it's worked and if it has had, you know, some measurable positive effect as well as no negative consequences either. So Senator Metzen has moved the resolution. Further discussion? All right. All those in favor of the LCC resolution on emergency sick leave for the revisor of statutes. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The motion prevails, and the resolution is adopted. All right. One more here, members, on the agenda. A resolution relating to the Office of the Economic Status of Women, and if Ms. Brennan can come forward. Welcome.
Thank you.
Identify yourself for the record, and then you can present your resolution to us.
Thank you. My name is Amy Brennan. I'm the director of the LCC Office on the Economic Status of Women, and it's a pleasure to meet and see many of you for the first time today. The resolution that you have before you is calling for the establishment of an advisory committee for the OESW. And when I began working here in September, I was struck immediately by the significance of the work of this office. And what I did is I started to conduct an inventory of sorts of the resources that we had available to us, the skill sets that were in the office. We're a pretty small entity. The OESW employs me and one research and policy analyst, Andrea Lindgren. By statute, the OESW is asked to, in essence, be the eyes and ears for the economic status of Minnesotan women here at the legislature. It's in a very simple and straightforward way. Our job is to link the legislature and the community where it regards women's economic status. Upon request, and even sometimes when it's not requested, we will provide information to help legislators understand the impact of laws on women's economic status. And we also watch and monitor what is happening in the community. When appropriate, we raise awareness to you about those activities. So this is a job that we take very seriously, and we need to expand the reach of what we do through advisors who can help us make decisions and help prioritize and guide the work that we're doing. There's three reasons why I think this would be important to our office. First of all, to best serve you, it's vital that we have a meaningful connection to legislators and a clear pathway into the legislative process. The connection will make our work much more efficient and effective. Second, an advisory group will provide a more informed and wise direction for the work that we do. A colleague of mine speaks of this importance. Advisory groups, she says, have more wisdom collectively than any one person, including even the most expert of executive directors. And third, the advisory group would complement the existing strengths of the OESW and the LCC. With many of our issues, we have the content expertise on staff, but the additional legislative perspective is useful for us, and I admit that's particularly helpful to me as new to the legislative process. So I invite you to ask any questions that you have. This is a really simply constructed group of eight people, and the resolution is before you. Thank you.
Madam Chair. I was chair of the State Government Finance Committee when this group was eliminated. It somehow got its way back in again. Senator Metzen was on our conference committee, and you know, we talked about if this group ever came back that it was the legislature that would authorize it, if I remember correctly, and Senator Cascaden is no longer a member of the legislature, but when we eliminated it in the bill, the discussion was if it looked like this needed to come back again, that the legislature would do it. And I don't know if it was – I didn't vote for the state government finance bill last year, and I didn't read it as closely as I probably should have, but did we – maybe Senator Metzen knows, did it get recreated in the legislation as a rider? Because I know it was eliminated through statute, and we said that we would, you know, bring it back through. I'm sure Representative Kahn would be absolutely – enthralled to put this in the state government bill to recreate this, but I always thought that we went through the statutes or the, you know, as a rider if they wanted to put it into session law for 2 years or something. But
yeah, that's kind of, we had a little sidebar discussion down here, and that's what I think we should be doing, going through the legislative process and not creating another commission at this level. I mean, and we're in kind of early, so some of us sympathize with what you're trying to do, because you should have some kind of a board.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have anything now, is that correct?
That is right. Speaker, thank you. Madam Chair. Yes, that is correct. We don't.
Well, it only makes sense to me, and I'm just one vote, that you should have some governing board or somebody else to visit with you. I mean, you know, this isn't still a dictatorship, I don't think, your office, but
right.
But I would be willing to, unless legal counsel or somebody says, Madam Speaker, if we could do it here, otherwise some of us would be willing to help you out early, February 12th, the best we can, because this kind of stuff has to go through our Governmental Operations Committee by law, any boards and commissions, so there's a couple of steps, but I think we can move it right along, but unless I'm told otherwise, I think that's how we have to do it.
Well, I think, I'll speak for myself right now, that we had a meeting, and Ms. Brennigan, we had a good talk and talked about that it probably would be helpful for her to have some members involved in the work that she's doing. Now, I think the question is, this is not a commission.
Correct.
This is a department of the LCC. And so I think this is why they've taken this route. If we want to postpone this discussion and have a further discussion about whether it can be done in here or has to be done through the legislative process. But I don't really see that we are setting up a new commission here. We're augmenting her. And I think the concern is the appointment of members out of this group.
Well, Madam Chair, there is payment of per diem, reimbursement of expenses.
Okay. That's through her budget,
Madam
or
Chair?
Our budget.
It's the same, ultimately.
Well, yeah, I know that. But.
Representative Junkie, would you like to ask
Madam
something
Chair, well,
more directly?
I want to ask, we do have some staff here, too.
Yeah,
can they weigh in? Do you, Mr. Poss or anyone else?
Peter Watson.
Mr. Watson.
Watson. Poss. We have a Peter Poss.
Through the side door.
There you go.
Oh, good. And maybe, yeah, I don't know if it's just Ms. Brennigan.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
If you could tell us why you were, I mean, I don't know quite
right.
If this was the advice given by someone in particular, or if the prospect of doing it legislatively came forward or what.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This is not, we're not asking for a commission at this point. This was just a result of my own assessment of the work that needed to be done in the office and just getting more legislative input in a way that was a little bit more than me sort of picking up the phone and calling one person at a time and getting some input on priorities and work that we're doing. So it's not meant to be a commission. It's meant to be a less formal advisory group that would meet quarterly and that would really approve and be able to give the two of us some guidance on what would work legislatively and what other pieces we might need to look at and be a connection for us to the legislature.
Representative Seifert.
Madam Chair, I don't know that I disagree with that, but the way it's worded, especially under 5, you know, when you're talking about engaging consultants and facilitators, those are things that traditionally have been done by commissions when we actually employ someone outside basis, non-state employees, plus paying per diem and travel. And if somebody wanted to go back to the tapes, which I can't imagine anybody would want to, on the conference committee that Matts and I sat on when Senator Cascaden shared it, we had a discussion about this, and it was somewhat controversial whether to eliminate it or not. And I just think that the legislature itself, this is a bigger decision than just those of us sitting here, and it's not to minimize that this is important or anything, but I think the whole engaging consultants is that's a bigger deal than an advisory group usually does.
So, Representative Seifert, I'm just trying to be clear here because this group actually exists, and it does exist already, and so what they're trying to do is look for further input. I understand I'm hearing your concern about the consultant piece and also the piece about this group approving something that appoints members and approves the payment of per diem. But I think it's different than that it was eliminated and somehow this is a rogue effort to bring it back or something. So I want to be very clear that this is not any sort of rogue effort. This actually exists. And Ms. Brennigan is trying to efficiently and effectively do her job by giving us really the heads up that there needs to be more member input in this. So I think the question is how to do that, and I'm going to call Mr. Hubinger, and then maybe, you know, we may have to delay this until the next meeting and decide whether it's appropriate to move this direction or legislatively. So, Mr. Hubinger, if you could enlighten us on this method versus...
Madam Chair and members, I apologize if I repeat things because I was out of the room for a few minutes. As Representative Seifert indicated, when the commission was abolished 3 years ago, the duties of that commission were transferred to the LCC, and so Ms. Brennigan's office is now responsible for carrying out those duties. And in an effort for her to better do that and reflect the work of, or the interests of the members of the legislature, we've been proposing this advisory group. For us, it is not a key issue to have the ability to engage a consultant. That's something that would be helpful for them in getting their advisory group oriented and getting their work, but it's certainly not essential.
Okay. Mr. Hubinger, have we done this sort of thing before through the LCC, set up a mechanism where we appoint members to a group? I think there's a concern about that. There's a concern about approving in this setting versus legislatively the payment of per diem. And then there's this consultant piece, which sounds like, you know, that could be stricken from the resolution potentially. But could you help us with that, Mr. Hubinger?
Madam Chair, members, the LCC has statutory authority to create bicameral working groups, advisory groups, task forces as needed to do the work of the legislature. It was that framework that enabled the commission at its June meeting to appoint the terrorism emergency preparedness working group, the one on ethnic Americans working group, the one on airport funding. Those were all concepts that were described in various pieces of legislation. Some of the pieces were well established and some weren't, but none of those pieces actually established the working groups that the legislature concluded that it needed. And so the LCC, using its ongoing authority created those working groups to carry out that work.
Okay. And
did they,
Senator Pogue-Miller?
So that's, and there were legislators appointed to those?
Yes.
Madam Chair. Senator, yes. Yes.
Madam Chair, would it make any difference if, on the word change, if we said something like an advisory task force instead of an advisory committee? Does that, would that play into this, Mr. Watson or Mr. Just a couple of words?
Mr. Huebinger?
I don't know if that would work or not. I just
Madam Chair and Senator Demetson, the language in our statute is very broad and includes all of those phrases.
I heard you say task force. I didn't.
Yes.
I don't know if you said
committee.
Advisory.
Said
so, did you say advisory committee, too?
So, Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Pogue-Miller.
So a non... So we... The Speaker and the Committee on Committees in the Senate has been put in the position of appointing members of the House and the Senate onto bodies that were not legislatively chosen or
approved
or created.
Madam Chair, Senator Pogue-Miller.
Mr. Huebinger.
Yes.
Well, I would like to delay this, and I would like a list of all of those.
Too.
Because we just spent, I don't know how much time you spent in your office making appointments to places, but I mean, we get to the point, and this is not to denigrate any particular activity, but we're actually at the point in the Senate where we're having a hard time getting people to be on things. And I think that might indicate we have too many things, because the legislature actually has committees.
Maybe you and Representative Cypher should talk to each other.
I was just going to add another one to my chart.
You just
I'm with you, Marty, over here.
All right. I think for the purposes of this meeting, maybe if we could work with you and figure out the best route for this. And
what I hear
after that. So,
get us a
so no one has moved that. The resolution. Yes, right. Representative Murphy.
Before you do that, Madam Speaker, Madam Chair, couldn't Mr. Huebinger
appoint
these people without asking us?
Well,
he's not that powerful.
You know,
what's that going to
Mr. Huebinger, I think the case is Representative Murphy could do that. And I think what they're doing is they're actually getting legislative authority to do this, which is not a bad thing. But I think there's a question about how to do it.
Okay, Mr. Huebinger. Have you ever appointed people to an advisory committee of something in the LCC?
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, no. The statute is 3.305, I think, and it
Where did that
calls
come
for
from?
The commission to create working groups, task forces, advisory commissions. And I would.
Now, the other question I have is. Is this advisory committee, they're not all representatives and senators?
Yeah. Is that Madam Chair, yes, at this point they are, yes.
Yeah.
Well, there's a poverty member. They aren't all members, are they?
So.
Madam Chair?
Yeah.
How are they?
There's a section law.
Senator Pogue-Miller.
There's a section law, subdivision 6 of 3.305 bicameral working groups that is the authority to do this. And staff thought this was maybe 10 years old. How long has that authority been there?
Mr. Huebinger.
Madam Chair and Senator, it was when a number of commissions were abolished in 95 or 96.
That's what I chaired. That's what I chaired the GovOp Committee. I was with the Representative
Senator Metzen.
We
has his fingerprints on this.
We abolished about 80 or 90 boards and commissions, remember back then? The less government, that's it.
Get a shot of that?
Senator Pogue-Miller.
Madam Chair, I think that, and this maybe this is a good idea because of the way it got there, I don't know, but putting somebody, not the legislature, in a position to basically say we have to appoint legislators to something seems to me just a little... I'm also bugged by the fact that we have to appoint, somebody thinks we have to appoint things to the governor appoints. You know, governor sets up things, the executive, not this one, just any governor sets something up, and all of a sudden there's legislative members And all of a sudden, we have to appoint people, and you sit there and you go, well, where did that come from? Because there is a separation of powers issue here.
Senator Pogomil, I don't know what you had for lunch, but it must have been very interesting.
No, just,
a lot of sugar.
Madam Chair, we have a very qualified staff person who basically spends her entire life doing this. And I just think there's too many things.
Senator Pogomil, you and Representative Cypher had a caucus about that. I think we're going to delay this, and we'll deal with it at the next meeting. Representative Search, I guess you could call me Taskmaster Kelleher, according to, instead of Speaker.
We have the Senate Christmas
party. Madam Speaker, and perhaps we could set up a task force to look into this issue.
As long as you don't put legislators on.
Because the Senate seems very busy. They were in a meeting earlier today. They got a Christmas party, so... Perhaps this might be something we can look at.
Well, members, Representative Murphy?
Before we go, though, Ms. Brannigan, you had a survey recently that we answered. I assume everybody got it, all the legislators got it. And did you have a good response to that?
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, we had some response. It's still open, and we're looking for more.
Okay. And Ms. Brannigan, was the responses that you received, did they give you the indication that this committee talking about women's economic issues is very, very important to the citizens of Minnesota?
Ms. Brannigan.
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, we did get positive feedback on the formation of the committee, and as I've been meeting and getting to know legislators and community members, they also support the idea of an advisory group, an informal advisory group.
Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair and Senator Metzen, I think that the kinds of things that the commission that you got rid of in the past and then putting the duties into the LCC has diminished our knowledge of the issues of the economic, the things that are economically important to women throughout the state.
Murphy, I want to be clear that Senator Metzen eliminated other boards and commissions,
right,
but it was really Representative Seifert who eliminated this particular.
Representative Seifert. Okay,
I voted against.
Thank you. Okay, I misspoke. But I think that since the time that we haven't had the economic status of women as it was, and we said that the duties and the analysis should be done under the LCC, we have been lacking important information on the topic that many people in this state and groups in this state relied on that information, and they're no longer getting it. And as a result, women are having a tougher time economically than they did at that time.
Madam Speaker.
Senator Metzen.
Just to make it clear, at least from me, I want to get this done. I think the issue is how we get it done. So I think that's what I'm hearing at the table.
I think that's
Most of us, I believe, are for doing this. It's just the mechanism to get there. So sleep well tonight.
Do not fret, everyone.
I'm sure it's going to get done.
We'll get there.
Yeah, we'll get there.
Members, before we adjourn, I just want to thank all the staff who's here, and I hope you will thank your staffs who cannot be represented here today for all of your work throughout the past year, and wish everyone a happy holiday and a very prosperous and productive new year. So thank you very much, and we stand adjourned.
Good, thank you. Merry Christmas, happy Great. Holidays.
Could you give me a list of the ones that we're appointing because of that process? The terrorism one we bring?
The hardworking staff in the way has the master list. And there's just a half a page worth of LCC, this LCC, that
they're all. I still want to know about bankers. These women that
Greg, I guess I already have that.
He's already got
this. What is this? Her master list.